We want to speak about something that has a slight connection to the Sedra and more of a connection to Sfiras HaOmer and the Minhagim of mourning for the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. We'll start with something, again, related loosely to the Sedra, and we'll answer the question eventually when we speak about Sfira and Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim or whatever. It says in the Zohar, the Mishnah Berurah brings it down on Hilchos Yom Kippur, that on Yom Kippur they lay in Achrimos Shnei Bnei Aaron, which the death of the sons of Aaron is mentioned in this coming week's Sedra, in Shmini, whatever they did, right? Sin is a very obscure exactly what it was that they did wrong. But in any case, they were killed. God smote them with the fire, the heavenly fire. And we read about their death, or we allude to their death on Yom Kippur. We read the beginning of Achrimos on Yom Kippur. And the Zohar says, whoever cries, sheds a tear for the sons of Aaron is a tremendous schooler for Kapara on Yom Kippur. It's always bothered me, how in the world can anyone cry for the death of the children of Aaron? Happened thousands of years ago. I never saw them, never knew them, right? Why in the world would somebody have feelings of mourning? I can understand you feel bad or whatever, but to shed tears because of two people who were killed 3,000 years ago? And every year we read it over and over again, so it becomes almost institutionalized. What does it mean? What are we crying about? Right, for 3,000 years, the two people, plenty of people in history died, greater people. And it doesn't ever say such a thing that, you know, that if you shed tears for them or whatever. So what's the idea? Similarly, we are mourning for the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Okay, now a lot of tragedies occurred in history. And we don't have mourning days for them. Very few. Right? There were periods where the entire sages of a generation were killed out. And we don't even know when it happened. We don't mourn for them. And here are 24,000 students, not the Rebbeim, not the Gedolim, students. And we have to have 33 days of mourning for them. Why? And Bechlal, what does that mean? Mourning for the Talmid Rabbi Akiva? Who were they? What's to mourn? In order to understand it, I want to first explain the mitzvah of counting the Omer. We all know that if you miss a full day in counting the Omer, right, then you can't count anymore with a bracha. Okay, but you should still continue counting. Why? So the normal explanation is the following. There is a question, what exactly the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is. Is it one big mitzvah with 49 parts, or is it 49 little mitzvahs? Every night is a separate mitzvah, except you have 49 of them, 49 of these little mitzvahs. Or no, it's one big mitzvah of counting 49 days. What's the difference? The difference is if you miss a day, right? If it's 49 separate mitzvahs, so if you miss one day, you can count the next day, you have the next mitzvah. Right? You miss this today's mitzvah, you have tomorrow's mitzvah, and you can make a bracha. But if it's one big mitzvah with 49 parts and you miss a day, then that's it. You don't have the mitzvah anymore. The mitzvah is a 49-day mitzvah, and you don't have 49 days. So the mitzvah's gone. According to the opinion that it's 49 separate mitzvahs, if you miss an entire day, you can still make a bracha the next day. Count and you make a bracha. Each day is a mitzvah to itself. But if you hold that it's one big mitzvah and you miss a day, that's it. There's no reason to count anymore. That's it. The mitzvah's gone. So we're not sure. So therefore, you continue counting because maybe every day is a separate mitzvah. But you can't make a bracha because maybe it's all one big mitzvah and you have no mitzvah to count anymore. And if you're making a bracha, you're making a bracha levatola. So because of the doubt, you can't make a bracha. But because of the doubt, you should continue counting. That's what's normally understood. There's only one big problem with that. If there's in fact a doubt, whether the counting of the Omer is 49 little mitzvahs or one big mitzvah, right, then why do we make a bracha every night? I understand if it's 49 little mitzvahs, every little mitzvah deserves a bracha. But if it's one gigantic big mitzvah, then you should make one bracha, either at the beginning of the counting or at the end of the counting, and that's it. Not every night. Every night is not a mitzvah to itself. It's just a part of the mitzvah. Just like Esrog and Lulav. Esrog and Lulav has four parts to it. You don't make a separate bracha on the Esrog and on the Lulav and the Hadassim and the Aravos. You make one bracha on the whole unit. So here too, you should make one bracha on the entire 49 days. Why make 49 little brachas? So if there is such a doubt that it's one gigantic mitzvah, then how in the world do we make a bracha every night? Maybe it's one big mitzvah and you shouldn't make a bracha on every part of the mitzvah. Therefore, I want to say that's not the idea. Everybody holds that every day of the Omer is a separate mitzvah. And therefore you can make a separate bracha. That's not the question. Still, there's an opinion that says if you miss one complete day, you can't count anymore. Surely you can't count with a bracha because, according to that opinion, there's no mitzvah at all. What does that mean? The question is like this. What is the mitzvah counting the Omer? Is the mitzvah to count each individual day? Right? We're saying now everybody agrees it's a separate mitzvah every day. But what is that mitzvah every day? Is the mitzvah to count separate days? Today is one day in the Omer. Today is the second day in the Omer. The third day in the Omer. The fourth day. The eighth day. That's the mitzvah. Each day is a separate thing, right? And you count that day individually. Or no, you're not counting individual days. You're counting the accumulation of all the days till then. You're not counting tonight the eighth day. You're counting 8 days. In other words, you're counting the accumulation of 8 days. And the way that it sounds like that. Because we don't say, Hayom Yom Shmini Ba'omer, today is the eighth day of the Omer, right, which is a cardinal number, eighth day, right, but we count 8 days, which is an ordinal number. I think that's what it is, right? So we count 8 days, Hayom Shmona Yomim, not Yom Shmini, right? Just like in the beginning of the Omer, we don't count Hayom Yom Rishon Ba'omer, Yom Sheni Ba'omer, Yom Shlishi, but rather we count Yom Echad, Shnei Yomim, Shlosha Yomim. Today is 2 days. It's not the second day. It's 2 days. Each day you count the accumulation of all the days till then. Okay? And again, it's no 100% proof from the language, because there's another reason we don't count first day, second day, third day, for a side reason. Right, that is that the first week you couldn't do that without getting into trouble. Meaning the following: the tzedukim who didn't believe in Torah Shebaal Peh always counted the Omer from the first Sunday during Pesach, the day after Shabbos Chol Hamoed. Why? Because it says in the Torah, "Usfartim lachem mimochras haShabbos," the day after Shabbos. So they understood that means Shabbos of Chol Hamoed. The halacha is not like that. The Torah Shebaal Peh says Shabbos over here means Yontif. Yontif is also called Shabbos. Shabbos Shabboson. Right? V'yom HaRishon Shabboson, V'yom HaShvi'i Shabboson. V'yom HaShabbos means the first day of Yontif. So we always start counting the Yomer on the second day of Pesach, no matter what day of the week it is. But according to the Tzedukim, they always started counting the Omer on Sunday, the day after Shabbos Chol Hamoed. So, if we would say that on the first day of the Omer, Hayom Yom Rishon Ba'omer, not Yom Echad, people get confused and think that Sunday. Sunday is Yom Rishon. And we said Yom Sheni, then we think it's Monday. And they would think that it's like the Tzedukim. We're supposed to count according to the days of the week and start on Sunday and continue Monday, Tuesday. So, Bedavka, they changed it to make it Yom Echad, Shnei Yomim, Shlosha Yomim, not to give a false impression. And once you start like that, you do it throughout the Omer the same way. Okay, so that's a possible reason why, even according to the other opinion, that we're taka counting individual days, but we still say it in such a way that sounds different, because otherwise we get into trouble and make it sound like we're doing like the Tzedukim and counting Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and whatever. Okay. But the truth is, it still sounds more like the other way. Like the fact that we're not counting individual days, we're counting the accumulation of the days. That's the question. The question is not, is it a separate mitzvah every day, or is it one big mitzvah? It's definitely 49 separate mitzvahs. The question is it 49 separate mitzvahs to count each individual day? And then, if you miss a day, you can still count the next individual day? But if the mitzvah is to count the accumulation of days, I can't say tonight is 8 days if I missed last night. Because for me it's not 8 days, I only count the 7 days. So therefore, that's a question. Is there a mitzvah? Even though there's a mitzvah every night, but the mitzvah is the accumulation, or the mitzvah is each individual day. On the side that the mitzvah is the accumulation of the days, we can explain quite a few interesting things. Firstly, we count the days and we count the weeks. Okay? Never bother you, we count the day at the beginning of the day. I just counted Hayom Shmona Yomim Ba'omer, and it wasn't 8 days already finished, it was the beginning of the 8th day. Right? Meaning 8 days is going to come. It isn't finished. Yet when we counted last night, what's it called, the 7 days, which is 1 week, we counted the end of the week. Why the week we count at the end of the week, the last day of the week? We don't count on the first day of the week. This is 1 day in the Omer, which will be 1 week. This is the beginning of a week. We start beginning of a day, why not the beginning of a week? So if the mitzvah is to count each individual thing, each individual week, and in each individual day, the question's a great question. Why is there a difference? But if the idea is to count the accumulation of days and weeks, we're not counting 1 day, the first day, but 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, and so on. And by the week also, we're counting the accumulation of a week. 1 week. So it's understood that when does a week accumulate? At the end. You can't say in the beginning, I've accumulated 1 week. You can only say at the end of the week that you've accumulated a week. On the other hand, with days, it's not like that. In days, there's a special halacha of mitzvah hayom kikulo. By days, by many halachas, we have a halacha that a portion of the day is considered already a day. Right? So it's something happy. A chasana takes place, what's it called? You have sheva brachas, right? From the day of the chasana. The chasana took place at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Right? An hour till shkia. Shkia is at 6. Okay? So on that day, that hour counts as 1 day. Miksa sayon kikula. Or the other way, a beginning of a day counts as a whole day. Somebody, Rachman al-Zon, sitting shiva. When do they finish their shiva? Right away in the morning of the 7th day. Because mitzvah sayom kikulo, a portion of the day, is considered like the whole day. And therefore, as soon as a portion of the day goes by, the 7th day is finished. We don't find that by weeks, that a portion of the week is considered like a week. We only find that by days. So every night I can say, I've accumulated 8 days because I've started the 8th day. And therefore, it's an accumulation of 8 days already. But I can't say at the beginning of the week, I've accumulated a week, or 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, because that law doesn't apply. When does it apply? The last day, the beginning of the last day of the week, like last night. Then I can say, I've accumulated, well, the beginning of the day counts as a whole day, and that whole day makes a whole week, so now I've accumulated a whole week. So we can only count the week at the end of the week, but we can only count the day at the beginning. We can count the day at the beginning of the day. But if we're counting individual days and weeks, there should be no difference. Right? I can count, this is going to be 1 day, this is going to be 1 week. What's the difference? But if it's an accumulation, the difference is obvious. Another thing that you can understand with this is could be why there are two different versions of the counting of the Omer. Mostly Ashkenazim say Ba'omer. And in Svardi Sidurim you'll find La'omer. I always like to bring the proof that Ba'omer is more correct, because did you ever hear of Lag La'omer? You say Lag Ba'omer. But the truth is that some people call it Lag La'omer. So it's no 100% proof either. In any case, I was thinking though that both of them are right. and they go on two different things. They used to count the days and weeks separately, according to some opinions. They made a separate bracha on the days and a separate bracha on the weeks in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. So the days is what's it called, is Ba'omer, because I really haven't accumulated the full day. It's just towards the day, because the beginning of the day is considered already like a whole day. So then the days, they said Ba'omer. But by the weeks, you had to do it at the end of the week. That was already La'omer in retrospect. So now, since we count the days and the weeks all with one bracha, so some people said Ba'omer on the whole thing, and some said La'omer on the whole thing. Okay, in any case, that's another possibility. Another thing that that we can understand with this is the following. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu saw at the end of the counting that the Jewish people weren't ready for the giving of the Torah. So he added one extra day, pushed off the giving of the Torah one day. Torah was supposed to be given on the 50th day of the Omer, and Moshe Rabbeinu pushed it off to the 51st day. He added one extra day. So the question always bothered me, if they weren't prepared in 49 days, what in the world was one more day going to make a difference? What did they do in that one day? But if the idea is that every day is an accumulation of what came before, then it's not one day that he added. He added a full other 50 days. Because the first day you have the power of one day, the second day you're already counting 2 days, 3 days. It's like they used to have in the children's magazines, right? If somebody wants to give you $1 million, or they'll give you a penny a day and double it every day for a month, which would you take? So most people think that $1 million is a lot more than a penny is a double. But if you think about it, right, after 30 days, I don't know how it works out mathematically, but if you have 1 penny the first day, you have 2 the next day, 4, 8, 16, and it goes then astronomical, right, until by the 30th day, you have much more than $1 million. So, same thing over here. The first day, you count 1 day. The second day, you're counting 2 days. You're accumulating the first day plus the second day. So you have a power of 2 days. By the 49th day, you have the power of 49 days. So if you add an extra day, you have an extra, you have a 50 day extra, not just 1 day. Which answers another question. It says that they were on the 49th level of Tuma. And they had to get to the 49th level of Tahara, of purity, to get the Torah. So you needed 49 days. But the Torah doesn't work out like that. Because from minus 49 to plus 49 is 98. Beyond that, so they say, okay, that the Tuma and Tahara doesn't work like a thermometer, minus to plus, but it's parallel. For every level you go up, Tahara, you go down, you take away one level of Tuma. They're like parallel ladders. And each one negates the other on a scale up. Okay, but still doesn't make sense. Because I'm sure that it's harder to reach higher levels than to reach the initial levels. Initial level may be easy to do, right? It's a little thing. But as you get higher and higher, it's much more difficult to reach those higher levels. Most people can reach the lower levels. But to reach the higher levels should take more time. So how is it that every level only takes 1 day? Right? The higher levels, if the lower level takes 1 day, the higher level should take 10 days. That's the idea. The first level only took 1 day. The second level, you need the power of 2 days behind you. You not just have that power of the second day, you have 2 days' power giving you that second day level. And to get to the third level, you need 3 days' power and 4 days' power. So it accumulates astronomically. As you go higher, it becomes more difficult, but you have more behind you. So the third day, you're not counting 1 day of three, you're counting 3 full days. You have 3 days of power to reach that level of the third day. And that's why, what is the 50th day called? Shavuos, weeks. What kind of weeks? It's 1 day. But it's not. It's the accumulation of 7 weeks. That 1 day is an accumulation of 7 weeks, so it's Shavuos. It is 7 weeks, because that's the accumulation that you have. Now, based on all of this, I want to explain the mourning for the students of Rabbi Akiva fitted into this scenario. Okay. Let me start with the Medrash. We've said a different explanation of this Medrash in the past. I want to give you a new explanation. The Medrash says Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha, giving a shir, and the students began to go to sleep. Bikshu l'namne. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years. And Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake them up. Okay. So he said to them the following. Ma rosa Esther, shemolcha almeya v'esther v'sheva medinos. What did Esther see that enabled her to rule over 127 provinces? Tavo Esther basbita shelsara, shechoysa meya v'esther v'sheva shonim. Let Esther, the great-great-granddaughter of Sara Imenu, who lived 127 years, rule over 127 provinces. So they all woke up. What in the world is there a connection between Esther's 127 provinces and Sara's 127 years, except for the fact it's the same number? But there's no obvious connection. So they woke up, and Rabbi Akiva went on. So it's not reasonable to think that Rabbi Akiva just wanted to tell them something startling that made no sense to wake them up. There must have been some message in what he was telling them, right? And why they were going to sleep. So I want to conjecture the following, okay? It says, what were the sins of Rabbi Akiva's students? There are three different sources that say what seems to be three different sins. We're going to explain it, that they're all aspects of the same sin, the same mistake. One is what you're all familiar with, lo nagu kavod ze bezeh. They didn't treat each other with the proper respect. Second sin, they didn't fill the whole of Eretz Yisrael with Torah, didn't spread their Torah to the whole of Eretz Yisrael. The third sin, they didn't share their Torah one with the other. They were selfish, einayim tzara. Their eyes were narrow with their Torah, meaning on the surface, they were selfish. They didn't share their Torah with each other. They didn't spread Torah to the entire Jewish people. They didn't share their Torah with each other. And they didn't treat each other with the proper respect. Those are the three sins, three different sins. I want to say that they're all the same thing, and they all stem from the same mistake that they made. What was the mistake? We know that because the Torah is revealed wisdom, and not accumulated wisdom like science and other wisdoms, right? It decreases as time goes on. You get farther and farther away from the source, and that's called Yuridas Hadoros. There is a each generation is lower than the generation before, because the generation before was closer to the source, and everything loses something in giving it over. So the Moshe Rabbeinu was on the highest level. Yeshua lost something. And as the generations go, each one is lesser than the one before, and that's called Yuridas Hadoros. Okay. There are certain generations where this effect is very intense. Usually it happens slowly. This generation isn't as great as the generation before, but the difference isn't that marked, isn't that intense. But there are certain times in history where for various reasons, social reasons, tsarist reasons, whatever it may be, the difference between one generation and the next was extreme. Example, after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Okay, the generation that came after the destruction of the temple and the generation that lived while there was a temple, the difference was a very great difference. It went down what you call 10 levels, not just one level. The Kesef Mishnah, I think, says that's why there was, you know, the difference between the Tanoim, the ones who were the authors of the Mishnah, and then there were Amoroim. Those were the authors of the Gemara. There was a cutoff point. Rav and Shmuel were the last generation of Tanoim, the first generation of Amoroim, to the point where Rav is considered both a Tana and an Amora. Tana hu poli. Shmuel didn't have that designation. He was a contemporary of Rav, but he was already on the other side of the line. So it was an abrupt change. In other words, up until this generation, they were Tanoim and they could argue with each other. After this, you couldn't argue on a Mishnah. Amora couldn't argue on a Mishnah. He had to find another Tano held like him to argue. Okay, he didn't have the power anymore to argue on a Mishnah or whatever. And then there was a, from the Amoraim to the Rabbon and Savaroi. Same thing. They couldn't argue on the people in the Gemara. And then there were Rishonim, Achronim, and so on. So what? Who decided this? Now somebody got up one morning and said, okay, that's it. From now on, we're Amoraim, and you can't argue with the people who came before. What? And it went, and Tanoim went on for generations. There were many generations of Tanoim. And we didn't say that an earlier Tana, a later Tana couldn't argue with an earlier Tana, even though he was seven generations before him. And the generations went down. But they went down slowly. There was something that happened, socially, economic, whatever it may be, right? I'm sure a historian could tell you, that made the difference. They saw themselves. Rav, Shmuel, that generation, said to themselves, the difference between us and the generation before us is so great that we have no power to argue with them anymore. They're different sug. They're a different kind. And they accepted it on themselves. From now on, we can't argue on the previous generations. There's a chasm between us and the generation before. The generation before didn't see that. They saw a gradual change, and it was only gradual. We could still argue. Even somebody six generations before. But between this generation and the next, the chasm was an intense one, and they felt that they weren't capable anymore of arguing the ones before. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that also happened. Right? You can see it even in our generation. Right? The generation before the Holocaust in Europe of Gedolim were on a much different level than the generation of Gedolim after the Holocaust. It's not the same. It's not the same. We don't have those stature of Gedolim that grew up in Europe. What's it called? Their stature doesn't exist today. There's a lot of Torah, whatever, but the stature of the people is nothing. They themselves, the people after the Holocaust, see themselves also very, very small compared to the people who were before. It was different circumstances, different world. And it didn't lend itself anymore to creating that kind of grandeur, that kind of scholarship in Torah and piety in Torah, whatever. Okay. So that's what happened with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Akiva's students were the first generation after the destruction of the Temple. Rabbi Akiva was alive already during the Temple and after, but his students already were the first generation born after the destruction of the Temple. Right? Rabbi Akiva was, a contemporary of Bar Kokhba, which is about 52-something years after the destruction of the Temple, and that was in Haruge Beitar, and Rabbi Akiva's students were the product of the generation after the Churban. And therefore, they looked back at the generation before them, of people who lived during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and they looked at themselves as midgets. What are we? What is our Torah worth? Compared to what came before us, were nothing. And therefore, they didn't respect each other with the full respect they deserved, because they felt, each one himself, what am I? My Torah is nothing compared to what was before, so they minimized their Torah. Because of that, they had a very narrow vision of their Torah, and they didn't share it with each other because they felt it wasn't worth sharing. And they didn't fill the land of Israel with Torah, because they felt, what is our Torah worth that we should go and spread it? It's all the same source. They felt very low. Who are we? Who are we? So they're right. Compared to the generation of the people in the Beis HaMikdash, their Torah was really like midgets compared to a giant. So they didn't deserve the respect, right, that was given to the people of the generation before. They respected each other, but not with that full respect, because they felt that our Torah is minuscule. And therefore they didn't share it with each other because they felt it wasn't worth sharing. And they didn't spread it to the Jewish people because they felt it wasn't worth spreading. So they were right. What was a mistake? The mistake was the following. And it fits in how we explain Sfiras HaOmer. The Mabit in Sefer Beis Elokim asked the following question. He said, generations of prophets, of Tanoim, Amoroim, Rishonim, have prayed for Mashiach. Right? And didn't come yet. So who do we think we are that we're going to pray for Mashiach? He's going to come. If their prayers didn't help, how in the world is our prayers going to help? That's the question. He says the question is only a valid question if you think that any one generation's prayers is going to bring Mashiach. Then if their generation couldn't bring it, how in the world is our generation going to bring it? But that's not how the way it works. It's an accumulation of all the generations. So all the prayers that went by from the Nevi'im and the Tanoim and Amorayim already accomplished 99.99% of what has to be accomplished. We just have to put that 0.01%. That we can do. There's a certain amount that has to be done. It's not any one generation that's going to bring Mashiach. It's the accumulation of all the generations. And therefore, in that respect, a later generation is sometimes considered even greater than the generations before. Why? Because he compares it to the following. True, every generation compared to the generations after it are like a giant to a midget. The generation after is a midget compared to the giant. And the midget is nothing compared to the giant. Unless you put the midget on top of the giant's head. If the midget's on the giant's head, then he's taller than the giant. And he can reach where the giant can't reach because he's on the giant and above. If you look at the Jewish people as separate generations, individual, then we're midgets compared to the generations that came before. But we're not separate from them. We're standing on their shoulders. All the generations, in the, just like the Sefiras HaOmer, is an accumulation. It's not one day and a second day and a third day. It's one day and then 2 days together and 3 days together. So the Jewish people is one generation and then two generations and three generations. And we as individuals are midgets compared to the generations before. But we're lemaisa standing on their head. So we're even greater than them. Because together with them, we're even higher than the giant. Even though individually we're midgets. That's what they misunderstood. They didn't understand that you didn't look at yourself as an individual generation. You looked at yourself as a continuation of all the generations of Klal Yisrael. And that's what Rabbi Akiva told them. Rabbi Akiva was darshaning. He was demanding from his students that they be active. Go spread your Torah. Right? Go fill up Eretz Yisrael. Don't feel like you're nobody. He said, and then, hein bikshul namnim. Nimnum does not mean they were going to sleep. The word nimnum means, the Gemara says, they were awake and yet not awake. They were inactive, meaning the following. You're awake, and if somebody asks you something, you can answer, but you can't initiate anything. You're drimmeling. That's what it's called in Yiddish. Right? You're awake, but you're not awake. Okay? So you could answer if somebody, you're not dead asleep, right? That's not like today. Today, if somebody goes to sleep, that's it. He's finished. Right? But then, they were in a state of inactivity. They could answer, but they couldn't initiate anything. That's what it says. They felt they were not important. So what are we going to initiate? We're going to spread our Torah? We'll share our Torah? What's it worth? So Rabbi Akiva told him the following. You know, you're similar to somebody else in history. Esther was also the first generation after the destruction of the first temple. You're the first generation after the destruction of the second temple. But she was the first generation after the destruction of the first temple. She could have felt the same way as you. What am I worth? Look at the people who came before. They were giants. And now, I'm the beginning of a generation after the destruction of the temple. I'm a nothing. So she could have also been inactive and not felt she could accomplish anything. And yet Esther went and saved the Jewish people. She was tremendously effective. What did she see that gave her the power to be so active and rule over 127 Medinos and not feel like you feel, like a midget? Because she looked at Sara Imenu and she realized, I'm not an individual, but I'm on the shoulders of everyone who came before me till the beginning of the nation, till Sara Imenu. And just like Sara Imenu, who lived 127 years, it's not that she had 127 separate years, but a person's life is the accumulation of all the life. And she became a Sara Imenu not from 127 separate years, but from the accumulation of 127 years. That was Sara. So too the Jewish people aren't separate generations, but they're the accumulation of all the generations. And therefore true, as an individual, maybe I'm a midget, but I'm standing on the shoulders of all those giants who came before me. and each giant is standing on the shoulders of the giant before him. So I'm way up there on the skyscraper, and I can be active too. That's what Rabbi Akiva told them. Right? Don't feel insignificant, because you're the first generation of destruction of the temple, the second temple, because it was somebody just like you in history who was the first generation of the destruction of the first temple. And she didn't feel insignificant. Look what she accomplished. Why? Because she realized that she looked and saw Sari Menu as the beginning of this accumulation, and she did the same. So it comes out that the students of Rabbi Akiva's mistake was that they didn't realize this idea of accumulation. They thought everything you look upon as a separate entity to itself. And what was where did we learn that lesson from? Sfiras Omer. So it's specifically during Sfiras Omer that we learn this lesson that you don't look at things as individual things that are separated one from the other, but you look at a continuum of an accumulation of things. And they didn't learn that lesson from Sfiras HaOmer, and therefore the Rabbanu Shel Olam made them die during Sfiras HaOmer, in order that when we're learning the lesson of Sfiras HaOmer, of the idea of accumulation, we can understand why their mistake was, and we can feel also, right? We should feel like midgets, like fleas, compared to them. They were midgets. We're fleas. But no, we're a flea. But we're on the scalp of a gigantic giant. So that makes us significant. So we shouldn't feel that. So therefore, the mourning for the students of Rabbi Akiva is a lesson in Sfiras HaOmer. Understand what mistake they made, why they considered themselves unimportant and didn't fulfill their purpose. And if you don't fulfill your purpose, you don't deserve to live here. So they were taken away from this world. But you learn from Sfiras HaOmer the opposite. Memela. How can we mourn then for the students of Rabbi Akiva? Right? Maisa never saw them. I don't know who they are. They died, 2,000 years ago. But the idea is the following. They were supposed to be the Mosrim. What's a good word for that? The givers over,
the link.
Okay, that's a good word. The link for all future Torah Shebaal Peh. All Torah Shebaal Peh came from Rabbi Akiva. He didn't make it up, but he was the conduit. He was the pipeline. All Torah Shebaal Peh, so leave it to Akiva. Rabbi Akiva's last five students, each one was the source of the tradition, of the handing over the tradition of Torah Shebaal Peh, of a different part of Torah Shebaal Peh. Reb Meir was what Stam Safra is, Stam Mishnah is Reb Meir, and Stam Safra is Rabbi Yehuda, and so on. Okay. So, and all of them according to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was the pipeline. Okay. Now, since then, okay, if 24,000 students would have been the foundation of Torah Shebaal Peh, if you figure out the accumulation from that till today, what kind of strength of Torah Shebaal Peh there would be. But in the end, only five students were able to be those transmitters. That's the word. Transmitters of the tradition. So now, if you make it, what's it called, accumulate over the generations, we're starting with five, is a lot different than starting with 24,000. So the level of Torah Shebaal Peh today is so much less. We're on such a lower level because we're not on the shoulders of giants, of giants, of giants that could have been, because those giants died. So instead of five giants being the beginning of the accumulation, instead of 24,000, only five were. So we're suffering today. That's what there's to cry about. Not to cry about those 24,000 who died then. But those 24,000 represent millions and billions today. So similar to the Holocaust. You're not crying for 6 million Jews that died. Your family, whatever. I didn't know that. But you know how many more Jews there'd be in the world today? If those 6 million weren't killed? Children and children's children. And just think how that multiplies in just one or two generations. Right? Sometimes we think they went down 70 nefashos, and they came out of Mitzrayim 210 years later with 600,000, millions of people. But if you think about it, families, right? Kenai nahara, b'li ayin hara. I have 11 children. Okay, so me and my wife have 11 children. My 11 children, amongst them, right, Adkan, have 60 grandchildren. So we're a little city. There's more people in my family than there was in Matityo when I went there. Right? Some total. I can make my own little city. That's not necessarily a big family. Right? And now, Mirz Hashem in the future, so each of those grandchildren is going to have children. If you add it up over the generations, right, it comes out to thousands of people. Thousands. It's an accumulation. So those 24,000, right, is not just 24,000 that died then, but it's the spin-off accumulation till today. It would have been a tremendously different world with different Torah. Same thing again, Holocaust. Those 6 million represent millions and millions and millions based on the families that were cut off. How many more Jews there'd be in the world? Maybe it'd be a different world, different. What's it called? How the Goyim would look at us, and our strength in the world would be different, and our spiritual strength would be different. That's what's to mourn. And that same thing goes for the children of Aaron. There were five Kohanim, Aaron and his four sons, that could have created the foundation of the dedication of Avodah, of service to the Rabban Shem and Klal Yisrael. Two of them died. So instead of the base being five, it was only three. Okay, so 3-5 is not a big deal, but it is a big deal if you look at accumulation. Because those three became more and more and more and more, and had it been the two extra, right, the Avodah and Klal Yisrael would have accumulated over the generations to a much more significant and intense foundation. So that's what we're mourning, not two individuals who died 3,000 years ago that I never met, how could I shed a tear? But if I really feel, right, my inadequacy, right, where I'm missing in Avodah Hashem, and maybe if there had been two more Kohanim to set the foundation and set that accumulation, right, of Avodah throughout the generations, it would have been a different story. I would have been I would be on a higher level. I would my Avodah Hashem would be greater, because I'd have a much greater support system than I have today. So that's what we're mourning. That's what it means, Barsav sheds a tear. Not for the two people who died in the 3,000 years ago, I don't know. But it affects me today. Because, like we said, it's not just two people. It's the accumulation of thousands and thousands and thousands over the generations from those two that affects me even today. And if I feel my inadequacy in Avodah Hashem, then I can attribute part of it to the fact that had there been those two people, maybe I wouldn't be as inadequate as I was. Okay. So that's one idea of Sfiras HaOmer and how it fits in with the, you know, also one last idea, and that is Lag BaOmer. Next year is going to be before Lag BaOmer. We'll mention it anyway now. What's so special about Lag BaOmer? So the Maharsha says the following. Very interesting idea, and it fits in beautifully with this concept of accumulation. The Gemara says that someone who, lives most of his life and hasn't sinned, then he's pretty much sure he's not going to sin the rest of his life. How much is most of your life? So the Gemara says 52 years, like the life of Shmuel HaNavi. Shmuel HaNavi lived 52 years. Somebody lives 52 years. That's considered most of his life. So the Maharsha says, where do we find that a lifespan is 103 years? Right, 104 years, that 52 is the midpoint? It's either 70 years, 120 years. Where do we find 104 years or 103 years as being a lifespan? That 52 years should be the most of life. So Maharsha explains like this. He says that a person's lifespan is 70 years. That's a total lifespan. Person can live longer in Gvuro Shimon, but an average total life is 70 years. The first 20 years don't count, because a person really isn't held responsible as a full adult till he's 20. In earthly matters, when he's 13 or 12 for a girl, but in heavenly matters, 20. You don't get heavenly punishments till you're 20. So the first 20 years don't count. That leaves 50 years. Okay. 50 years of active life. Those 50 years, he says, you have to divide into three parts. You need a majority, a two-third majority. That's called most, not a simple majority. So if you split 50 years into thirds, you get 16 years, 16 and a fraction. Okay, 16 and a fraction, 16 and a third, and you had 16 and two-thirds, and then you get 50. Okay, 3 times 16 and two-thirds is 50. So when is most, meaning two-thirds of a lifespan? On the 33rd year, because that's when you have two-thirds of the 50. Right? Two parts of the 16 and two-thirds have passed by. So the 33rd year already, that's considered, therefore, somebody who lives 52 years and is in his 53rd year, count the 20 to begin with, plus another 33 in the 50 active years, they have, what's it called, 52 years? When 52 years has passed by, that's what he says. So the same thing goes by Yetzias Mitzrayim. We left Mitzrayim, he says that the world was created on the 25th day of Adar, if you hold the world was created in Nisan. So that means man was created on the 6th day of creation, which was the first day of Nisan. 5 days earlier was the 25th day of Adar. If you count from the 25th day of Adar to the 15th day of Nisan, it's 20 days. Those days don't count. You start counting on the 16th day of Nisan. Okay? Because the first 20 days, like the first 20 years in a person's life, don't count. So the 21st day from the creation of the world is the second day of Pesach. Then you start counting 50 days till Shavuos. When do you reach the majority of that, meaning two-third majority, on the 33rd day of the count, which is really the 53rd day from the beginning from the 25th of Adar, which is the first 20 days. But it's the 33 days in the counting from the 16th day of Nisan. That's Lag BaOmer. That's the 33rd day of the Omer. So therefore, once you pass that, but that only works if you look at an accumulation. You're accumulating 33 days, two-thirds of your lifespan. Then you're pretty sure you're going to be okay to last third. But if it's each one day separate, then what does 33 days have to do? It's separate 33 days. But if it's an accumulation, right, then once I accumulate it two-thirds at a time, it's a pretty good sign that the rest is going to be okay too. So that's the significance, according to the Marsha, of Lag BaOmer. It fits in very nicely with the concept that we said.